listening to Bits of Me, the podcast about women's bodies, all the things we should know about them, and all the stories behind them. This week, I talked to Hannah Senior, who works as a clinical negligence lawyer for Slater and Gordon. Hannah had a series of abnormal smear test results starting at the age of 18, and shares her experience of advocating for herself, going through a painful colposcopy, and finding healthcare practitioners she feels she can trust. We also talk about the HPV vaccination program, and Hannah shares her advice for those nervous about their smear tests and her thoughts on women's health, as well as, in particular, the case of Emma Swain, which you can learn more about in a podcast episode of The Case Files, which I'll link in the show notes. You'll hear that there are aspects of the HPV chat which we're both a little uncertain about, so just a reminder that none of this should serve as medical advice, and you should always talk to your doctor if you have any worrying symptoms. I'm putting links to HSE information pages about both the HPV vaccine and the cervical check screening program in the show notes, just in case anyone wants to read up. If you're already a patron of Bits of Me, thank you so much for your support. It means a huge amount and means that I can keep having and publishing these conversations. If you've not yet signed up but would like to do so, go to patreon.com/bitsofme. So you went to your GP and asked for a smear test when you were 18.
I did.
Do you want to tell me why you did that and what happened?
So historically, my mum had cervical cancer before. So I'm one of five siblings. And before we were born, mum had, she moved to London and she came from Leicestershire, from Hinckley. And her GP didn't offer her a smear, even though she asked for it. She moved to London and she saw a new GP and she went to have a smear test, and pretty similar to my story actually, they did a smear test, they found abnormal cells, she had to go in and have some treatment because it was quite bad, and she was told that she would never have kids. They were very wrong.
Yeah.
And so because of this history, I was sexually active from quite a young age, and I'm bisexual, so you know, I did sleep with, you know, men and women and toys. And I kind of thought there was a lot of pain and there was a lot of bleeding in between my periods, and I had sort of quite a lot of cramping that made me feel really uncomfortable. And I went to my GP when I moved to Scotland, when I went to university, and said, I really think I should have a smear. And they were kind of like, you're very young, you know, let's just leave it. And I pushed and I pushed, and I eventually had to sort of slam my hands on the desk and say, my mum had cervical cancer, you know, I'm really concerned. There's the family history of this here, and, you know, please can you take me seriously? And they eventually did a smear test, and it came back with abnormal cells. And for the next, up until I was almost 25, I had abnormal cells and lots of treatment. And it took, you know, a good few years for it to sort itself out and for me to have a normal smear test result. And that was all below the age of 25.
And so after that first smear, when that came back with abnormal cells, you were referred then for a colposcopy.
Yes, yeah, I was referred for a colposcopy.
And do you want to tell me what happened?
So I remember going to the hospital and going into a ward and into a little room, and it was a male doctor, and I'd kind of read up a little bit and I was given a leaflet, so I thought it was going to be using, like, they burn with a coil to burn the cells out, and I thought it was going to be like that. So, you know, I'd laid back on the couch, and he started to tell me how unhappy my cervix looked, like it was a frown upside down and all this stuff, and I couldn't see the screen, and he wouldn't turn the screen around, so I didn't really understand what he was saying, why my cervix looked so unhappy. And, you know, what did that mean? You know, I couldn't see it. There was no visual representation for what he meant, and he didn't explain himself. So I kind of felt like I was at a loss. But I kind of thought, okay, well, I know what he's going to do. He's going to burn some stuff out to me. And then suddenly he goes, just give me a cough. I thought, okay, I'll cough. And I heard a snip and just horrific pain. It was unbelievable. And a few seconds later he went, just cough again for me. And I was like, no flipping way. Because, you know, I was like, you didn't even forewarn me that you were just about to cut something out of me that I haven't had any painkillers for. I don't remember being given any anaesthetic. There was nothing like that. And he just kind of proceeded it with this, give me a little cough. And you know when a doctor goes, oh, give me a little cough, you think, oh. But, you know, apparently it really moves your cervix enough to snip bits out of you. So I was really not very, I didn't feel very comfortable. I didn't feel very supported or informed about what was going on. And I bled a lot after that first colposcopy for a good sort of 6 weeks afterwards. It was a lot of, and it was really uncomfortable. But, you know, I didn't really know what else there was to do at that point. I just, you know, went along with what the GP said. And
had they told you to expect to be bleeding for a while? Or did you even know, like, you know, when you left that procedure, did you know what to expect or when to potentially go back and ask if something was wrong?
No, I remember getting a leaflet that said it would be uncomfortable and not to have sexual intercourse, I think, for 2 or 3 weeks. And that there would be, I think it says something like, you'll feel discomfort. And I thought, this isn't discomfort. I'm having to wear basically like night sanitary towels.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't just discomfort. It was really painful.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they didn't prepare me for that, at least, no.
And then when the results came back, what happened then? Or what was the result of the colposcopy?
So I remember going for another smear. Or they said they'd got all of the abnormal cells, but they wanted to check me in 3 months' time.
Okay.
So I went for another smear test in 3 months' time, and that again came back with abnormal cells. But they didn't do a second colposcopy. They then just kept an eye on it every 3 months. So I'm 18, going 19, having smear tests every 3 months. And about 2 years later, the cells had reached a point where they needed to be treated again.
Okay.
with a second colposcopy.
And presumably when you're going through those regular smears and they keep coming back with abnormal cells, you're not being diagnosed with cancer, because, you know, if that was the case, you'd be going down a different route, presumably. But were you told what was going on or what might be causing this?
No, they didn't say what was going on. I mean, because of my mum, I kind of had it in the back of my mind that this is how cervical cancer starts. So, you know, just be aware. I remember one nurse saying something about being quite, it happens to people that are very sexually active. And I kind of felt like she was sort of probing or being a bit derogatory. I don't know if my medical records say that I'm bisexual, but you know, this is back in sort of the mid noughties. There was no real help or support for people who are bisexual or going through this, or, you know, I don't think there was even Facebook at this point. It was a very new thing. So it wasn't really, you couldn't really go and talk to anyone to get any more information about it. But, you know, so I don't really think the nurse told me much at all.
And presumably that would be incorrect. I mean, you don't get HPV more or less because you sleep with more people. Do you know what I mean? You either get it or you don't, presumably. Now, this is, I could be wrong. I might need to go and Google this and add some links in the show notes. But I wouldn't think, like with other sexually transmitted infections, you know, you can sleep with one person and get it.
HPV is slightly different because, so there's about 100 different types of the human papilloma virus.
Yeah.
And 14 of those can cause cervical cancer, or they can cause cell abnormality. So there's 14% chance that one of the, that if you have HPV, that it's going to be a type that can augment your cells and cause cervical cancer. So it's not just about there being one strain. And I think that's what the vaccine protects against, is the HPV vaccine that came out in, God, I can't remember when it came out now.
But a number of years ago.
Was that 2002? Yeah.
I'm not sure, yeah.
But that, I think, protects against most strains of HPV, so it's much more of a blanket protection.
So tell me about the second time you went in for treatment, which was a better experience than the first colposcopy.
It definitely was. For a start, it was a female doctor, and she showed me the screen. And I think at the very beginning, I remember going in and she said, she's sort of leant over the bed and she went, "We do have some students here today, Hannah. Would you mind if they came?" And I thought, I've got my legs akimbo up on this, you know, strapped in. And I thought, do you know what? Go for it. Because if she's teaching someone, then I'm probably going to learn some stuff. And I have to say, she was really good. She turned the screen towards us and She really talked me through the procedure, and this time it was a burn. So she had this sort of kind of like a mini lasso sort of thing. There was like a hot coil, and she didn't say cough, which was great. And I didn't feel like she'd snipped anything out of me, but she was really, really great, because she did talk me through the procedure, and she did say that there would be some discomfort afterwards, and she explained how the cells had been removed and then would be sent for a biopsy and the aftercare, you know, because with the snipped cells, I didn't even know what would happen. I wasn't told that there was going to be a biopsy. And in fact, other than having the smear checkups, I wasn't ever told whether they'd come back as positive or what, you know. There was no sort of further information. But this time, she was great. She was really informative. And I think I'm glad that I said yes to the students. I don't know if that made a difference, but I think, she must have been a really good teacher, because they definitely learned a lot that day.
Yeah. And then eventually you got the all clear after years of all this stuff. What did that feel like?
I got the letter through the post, and I remember pinning it to my fridge. I pinned it to my fridge, and it lived there for like the next 2 years that I was at university, because it's the first time that I'd had to, I didn't have a worry, and I was then allowed to wait a whole year before having my bits probed again. You know, this is like, you know, quite pivotal moment, not having a chuff check every 3 months.
And where are you at now with all that stuff? How regularly do you need to go now?
So I moved back down to England, and I was really shocked when I moved back down that people in England, women in England, only have a smear test every 3 years. I don't know when that was introduced, but I was really quite shocked. So I registered with the GP, and we've got a lovely nurse there, Nurse Nikki, who's just fantastic. And, you know, I sat down with her on my first sort of welcome to the practice sort of meeting, and I said to her about my concerns, and she did book me in for a smear test, and that came back negative. And from that moment, we agreed that I would just be like a regular person and do it every 3 years, which is fine, been fine.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
So you work as a clinical negligence lawyer.
Yes, that's right.
Looking at your own experiences through that lens, what's your kind of takeaway from all of this? And how do you look at the system with regards to women's health and these aspects of women's health?
I feel that what I see on a regular basis is that women are not taken seriously when it comes to their health concerns. They're told that they are incorrect, or that it's not severe enough, or that it's not bad enough to investigate further, or that their symptoms don't match up, so it's not something that they're going to look at. And you hear this all the time from women who come in, and they've gone, I knew something was wrong 2 years ago, but my GP sent me away. You know, time and time again, women come forward with that because they're not taken seriously about their own bodies. It's as if GPs have been taught somewhere along the line not to trust women when they talk about their bodies.
Yeah. Do you want to maybe tell me a little bit about the case of Emma Swain? Not that it was your case, but and I'm not sure that everyone in Ireland will be familiar with it, but it's quite a telling story.
So Emma Swain was a young woman based in Croydon. She has had a very close relationship with her dad, Darren, who is her staunchest supporter. And when she was around 22, she wanted to go for a smear test. She asked her GP, and they said, "Oh no, you're too young," and sent her away. And she was having, I think, bleeding after intercourse and some pains, a lot of back pain. And she was sent away 14 more times from her GP. And eventually she did have a smear test, and she was diagnosed with cervical cancer, and she then spent several months trying to fight it. But she died at the age of 23 from cervical cancer that was entirely preventable.
I know that you have some concerns about the impact of the HPV vaccine. How the vaccination program is impacting on how GPs treat young women who come asking for smear tests.
It concerns me that women under 25 are pretty much automatically rejected for a smear test if they have, or even if they haven't had the vaccine, or, you know, more importantly, even if they have symptoms of cervical cancer or some cell abnormality, they're still rejected. And I think the HPV vaccine, although it's brilliant in, you know, it's kind of a first barrier, isn't it, to prevent something that is curable.
Yeah.
And I think that is brilliant, but it seems to be allowed GPs to put up a bit of a wall when it comes to women taking charge of their own health and saying something's wrong, can you investigate? And they go, no, you're absolutely fine. You're under 25. It's all going to be okay. And it's not that black and white. And I think GPs have become really reliant on the fact that they can just say no to women under 25 when they request a smear test. And it's not like a smear test is even an expensive test to do in terms of the NHS. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's not, you know, it's not going to cost the earth.
No. And I suppose the HPV vaccine, as you mentioned earlier, it protects against a number of strains, but not all of them, if I'm correct. So I suppose you can have the vaccine, and if you're really unlucky, you know, obviously then if you do have symptoms, of course you're going to go to your GP and ask for a smear, you know?
Yeah, well, the whole point of a GP is that they're your first port of call. You know, you don't want to have a bunch of women flooding to A&E just for a smear test. You know, they're supposed to be that first port of call where you can say, hey, doc, something's not right. Can you use your expertise to either refer me or to investigate yourself? Because there's so much that GPs can do. You know, they should feel that they're able to do something like a smear test if that's what's requested by the patient.
So considering your line of work and your personal experience, what would you like to see change, or what do you think could change to improve women's health services?
Trust women more. I think the medical profession needs to trust women when they come to them and say something's not right with my body. We've seen a lot in the news recently about endometriosis and the issues that women have getting diagnosed with something that not only damages their various parts of their body, but it can also really have a negative impact if it's not caught on their chances of having children and having a family. And I think women's health just needs to be taken a bit more seriously by the medical profession, and particularly GPs as the first port of call. I'd like to see that change. I'd like to see women being able to feel empowered to go to their GP and say, I know that I'm under 25, but I would like a smear test. Oh, and by the way, can you also do a blood test to check my hormones? Because the pill that I'm on sends me loopy.
Yeah,
you know, that would be really great.
Yeah. Where are you at personally now? Do you have concerns or worries about your health for the future because of what you've been through? Or do you feel safe with everything where you're at now?
I do feel safe because I am... maybe it's because I'm so used to advocating for people that I'm really good at advocating for myself. But I think if I was slightly, you know, not so much of a worrier, then I would feel worried to go to the doctor and ask for something. And I think in terms of my future, last November I had a bit of a scare because I had quite a lot of pain after sex and I was bleeding a lot. And so I went to my GP and I said, these symptoms have kind of started up again. And she said, oh, no, you can't have a smear test. You're not due for another 2 years. That's what it says in your records. I said, okay. And I went round through the history again. And I said to her, I really do think I'd feel more comfortable with it with a check. And of course, we're in the midst of COVID and she doesn't really want anyone to come in. And I said, well, you know, I am of childbearing age and I don't want something to interrupt with that if that's going to happen for me. Can you please take me seriously? And she said, okay, I won't do a smear test, but I will have a look. And I thought, okay, why can't you just, you know, stick a swab up there anyway? If you're using the speculum,
yeah,
you may as well use all of the equipment to just stick a swab up. So I went in and again, there was a student. So, you know, I said, yes, absolutely. She can have a nosy down there too. You know, we've all got to learn somehow. And that was fine. And she had a look and she said, I can't see anything down there. That's, you know, I can't see any whiteness or any yellowness or any change in any cells. It all looks pink and it all looks fine. So you'll be on track for your smear test in 2 years' time, which is when you're scheduled. And I thought, great, okay, I feel reassured. I did really have to fight for this, but she listened to me and she proceeded, and that's fine. Mm. And about a week later, I then got a letter from the GP to say, you're due for your smear test. And I was
oh, God.
For Pete's sake, I was literally just down there last week, you know. I just thought, oh, this system is flawed, massively, massively flawed. Yeah. You know, because also then it kind of set off my worries, like worry mind, like, oh, did she actually see something down there that she's now sped it up? Because, you know, up until that point, I thought, you know, she'd said, everything's fine, go forth and, you know, enjoy yourself, don't worry about it. But now I'd suddenly had this letter and I had to go back in front of the smear test, and it just seemed really disorganised and really not very consistent in terms of care.
Yeah, yeah. About your unhappy cervix, if she'd seen some tears or something.
Yeah, so I did ask the second colposcopy doctor about that, you know, years ago back in Scotland, and she explained that the cervix is supposed to look a little bit like a smile, but sometimes it turns upside down. And so she said that's probably what he meant, is that the pucker bit that leads up into your uterus can sometimes look like an upside down smile.
All right, there you go, it's news to me.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Yeah, I still haven't seen it in the flesh, but you know, that's what I've been told.
Yeah. As somebody who has had a few too many smears, if you want to put it that way, do you have any advice for people who are nervous about going in? You know, some people put them off because they just think that it's such an uncomfortable, awkward, horrifying experience sometimes.
Sometimes it is, you know. I've had friends who have really narrow cervix, so they have to like get a cushion or put themselves up. I've got other friends who have to have sex in the morning with their partner to loosen everything up a bit and get it, you know, a bit relaxed. Yeah, before they to prepare their cervix for the examination. I think don't be afraid to ask for a smaller speculum. Because they have a range of sizes, and you don't just have to go with that. You know, you can also ask your nurse to show you what she's going to be putting inside you. Mm. Don't be afraid to lean on your hands. But I think the most important thing with the smear test is that usually the NHS is all about cures. Mm. And this is a really important preventative check.
Yeah.
And for something that is so prevalent, like cervical cancer, and it's free, why wouldn't you get it done if it's a little bit uncomfy, you know? And I think the more we talk about smears with our friends, the more we share our experiences, the easier it will be for most women to go and get these things done, because it should be a part of our everyday life that we talk about smears, that we talk about the discomfort, that we talk about the pain, but we also need to talk about the benefits, because ultimately going and having a chuff check once every 3 years is going to be a way to prevent something potentially happening in the future.
Yeah. That was Hannah Senior on Bits of Me. For more on the civil justice system and medical negligence, do check out Slater and Gordon's podcast, The Case Files, including the episode about Emma Swain. You can follow Bits of Me on Instagram and Twitter, both of which I'll link in the show notes. And if you want to support the making of this podcast, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/bitsofme and by subscribing to the podcast and viewing it on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.